This is World Soccer Talk. It is the podcast. It's the pre-Christmas edition, which means we are feeling very festive tonight. In fact, Robin Burt has been supping the Chardonnay all day in joyous occasion of yet another West Ham United victory. I am Nick Webster, joined by Kartik Karashnaya, Nicky Hollander of Tottenham Hotspur and Peterborough United fame, and of course, Robin Burt. Kartik, how can the good people reach you? Because I know they want to reach you. And, just a quick bit of business. You can find us on Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. Kartik, how can people find you on Twitter?
KKFLA737.
Would you please get an easier one, honestly? KK, I can't even remember it, and you just said it.
That's only what? KKFLA737, like the airplane.
And get yourself
my initials, FLAM.
I'll get yourself a decent internet connection as well. You're all over the shop. All right, Nicky, how can the good people find you? Because I know you are all over the place, you shameless whore for publicity.
Well, I believe mine is just Nicky Hollander. Just put that in Twitter, Instagram, or you can also watch my workouts on NBC Sports. In the mornings, I think 6 till 9 or 3 till 6 in LA and 6 till 9 in Los Angeles. So nobody's waking up at 3 till 6 to work out of me. So you better DVR it.
That's what I call a shameless plug. I love it, Nicky. What about you, Bertie Boy?
It's simple. Well, you just said it at BertieBoy11. And I do want to just say one thing. I'm glad that the darts are on the World Darts Championship at the Ali Pally. Stand up if you love the darts, Nick.
Stand up if you love the darts.
Still playing.
Which channel are you seeing that on?
No. Oh, easy. On a dodgy stream.
Oh, okay. Just keep it to yourself then. And in the spirit of shameless plugs, I have to keep up with Nicky. It's all about keeping up with the Nickies today. I actually did a soccer series on the Livestrong Network. So go to livestrong.com. And you can see some of my little videos, how to kick a soccer ball. And talking of how to kick a soccer ball, we've got to go straight to it, haven't we? Anfield, a rollicking 100 minutes of football action. And Liverpool, yes, definitely escaping with some pointage, no doubt, no two ways about it. Even though they were, in my book, the better team. And yes, that does stick in the craw. And I'm sure Nate would love to be on the show tonight to wax on gloriously about the pool. But Martin Skrtel really bailing Brendan Rodgers out. I thought for a minute there Rodgers was going to be in massive trouble, especially after Barini had got himself sent off. And to lose at home to Arsenal would have been yet another nail in this coffin that has been put together slowly but surely. But Skrtel bailed him out. Rodgers said, I thought we were brilliant. To concede 3 shots on target and dominate possession against one of the top teams in Europe at keeping the ball was excellent. I saw our ideas starting to return today, but we need to make better decisions defensively. We do lots of defensive work religiously. But, I mean, for one, it's all well and good keeping possession, but results are what matter. Kartik, let's start with Liverpool before we go to Arsenal. What did you think of Brendan Rodgers' side today? And are they on the way back? Or is it just Brendan Rodgers once again spouting PR nonsense just to try and keep himself in a job?
Nick, unfortunately, it's the latter. Once again, Liverpool, they may have had a lot of possession. They may have had a lot of slick play. No cutting edge in front of goal. Defensive breakdowns. Guys coming into space unmarked. And these are the sorts of matches Arsenal used to lose, right? Back in the day, Arsene Wenger's side would outplay teams in the top, their opponents in the top 3 or 4, particularly United and Chelsea. And Wenger would always be complaining, oh, they hit us on the counterattack 3 times and beat us. Well, now it seems like Liverpool and Brendan Rodgers is the manager of a big club making those same Wenger-like excuses. And we heard it again today. I didn't see any discernible improvement from Liverpool, quite frankly. And I think they still have a long way to go to get into this race for 4th, which West Ham's in, Arsenal's in, and Spurs are in. Those 3 teams right now.
Just curious, is anyone opening up a toffee? Does anyone hear, like, scrunching, clicking toffee sounds? Whoever's opening up toffees, stop it immediately. Nicky.
I'm a fitness trainer. It's definitely not me.
It's definitely not you. Nicky, I think the defining moment for me was the equaliser, and I look at Arsenal, they set up in their little zone, and they've given Skrtel a 15-yard run at the ball. I mean, when is Arsene Wenger going to say to himself, perhaps zonal marking doesn't work in the Premier League, or it doesn't work against teams that have a player with the intensity and the desire to win a ball of a Skrtel?
I mean, I think the problem, like, Arsenal have that philosophy of playing attractive football. They've got pretty much everyone on the field who wants the ball, pass and move, is thinking about how to get space going forward. That is their whole, like, way they think. And every player on the field, maybe you've got Mertesacker, he's kind of thinking about spaces and playing the ball. They don't have that defensive mentality in their head. And I think that Arsenal have really got to look at playing like a couple of defensive midfield players, because their attacking players are so good. You just need like that little shield, those players to pick up that run. And I know that Wenger, he likes to play like Arteta, and he likes to play defensive midfield players who really just intercept and like to play those great passes. But, you know, again, you know me, I'm a Spurs fan, but I think Wenger is the best manager in the league. And I think that he does need to just be a little bit more cynical sometimes. I won't blame him for not being, because like I said, if everybody's Wenger in the Premier League, you've got the best league bar none in the world. You probably have already, but you've got the best league bar none. So I don't blame him, but I say he needs to tweak it a bit and understand that you do need to, at some point in the last 2 minutes of extra time, I mean, of time added on, when you're like 7 minutes, do something a little bit cynical.
Yeah, cynical, that would be great. You know, Arsene Wenger said that Liverpool left a scar in his heart last year after that 5-1 demolition. Bertie, looking at the two managers, Rodgers and Wenger, both of them under pressure in different ways, who's the happier manager here? Because obviously Liverpool going through a tough time of it, and Arsenal really just trying to get something going on the road and trying to pick up points against the big boys, which they've struggled.
Yeah, it's going to be Wenger, you know, who's definitely going to be the happier of the two. I mean, but I do think that Rodgers will be happy with that goal in the last few minutes, what, in the 95th minute or something like that. But, you know, I thought it was a very entertaining game. I think both managers can be happy with the way the game panned out. I think any time you go to Liverpool and get a draw, that's a fair result. I thought Arsenal, as Nicky said, I think they sort of blew it a little bit at the end. They really should have kept their shape. Mertesacker, you know, was hugely abused, I hear, on Twitter after the game by the Arsenal fans. And, you know, rightfully so. I mean, there was a whole sort of ping-pong.
Well, Mertesacker,
you know,
was hugely
sort of bobbing around.
Mertesacker was abused by the entire Liverpool front line. I mean, he is so slow. He makes you look fast. And I was talking to a fellow coach about Mertesacker on the way home from coaching at ODP. And he said to me, Mertesacker must be the greatest reader of the game of any defender in the Premiership, because he's got absolutely no pace.
I'm telling you now, let me just say one thing. Like, fans have no clue what they're doing sometimes, because Mertesacker, I've seen him on the field. He's the most wear his shirt, his badge on his shirt, do everything for Arsenal player that I've ever, like, I've seen in a long time, since like Bold and Adams. And like, to go after him, you're just destroying the heart of your team. It doesn't make any sense. Do you think that he really went out there to like play badly? All right, he made a mistake.
No,
like,
absolutely.
He's still a world-class player. But you got to get off his back.
Well, I think it's the Arsenal MO though recently. If they're not slagging off Wenger, they're slagging off Mertesacker. Next week they'll be popping off against Sanchez because he hasn't scored in a couple of games.
Crazy.
I mean, honestly, Nicky, Arsenal fans are becoming more and more like Tottenham fans every day.
100% agree. 100% agree, man. It's like never satisfied, never understanding I mean, we ain't going on to Spurs game yet, but never understanding how to help your team, whether you're happy or not, figure out how to help your team.
Well, let's talk about some fans who are usually really, really very, very grumpy. They got happy for about 5 weeks and now they're sad again. That would be Newcastle United after being done by Adam Johnson in the 90th minute. I mean, it really was a classic Tynan-Wear derby. Players getting seriously stuck in, challenges just flying everywhere. I thought the referee actually did quite a good job in keeping most of the players on the park. And then for Adam Johnson, a lifelong Newcastle United fan, to get the winner in such dramatic circumstances, absolutely brilliant. The reaction of Gus Poyet, well, I mean, I thought he was going to give himself a hernia on the sideline. And it seems to me that Poyet and Sunderland have got the hoodoo over Newcastle United. The Magpies just can't beat them. We'll go to Kartik first of all. Kartik, pressure on Alan Pardew, it's beginning to build again. I mean, I can't believe it, because it was only last week that he was awarded Manager of the Month for November. And, you know, he's had a couple of losses on the bounce now, and all of a sudden the pressure's back on him again.
Oh, it certainly is. I watched this match with a number of Geordie friends of mine, and first off, midweek League Cup. League Cup doesn't matter for most clubs, but it does matter for Newcastle when you haven't won a domestic trophy in over 50 years. They went to White Hart Lane and got run off the pitch. So he's already in a tenuous position again with the supporters. Also, Mike Ashley got into a little trouble this week with Scottish authorities. That's a whole other issue. But already in a tenuous position with supporters. He's lost three in a row to Sunderland. He comes into this match having lost two in a row at St. James Park to their rivals, to their local rivals, and this happens. And this is a Sunderland team that has not gotten a positive result in some time. They've been getting a lot of draws, but AJ, that smash-and-grab goal at the end, great win for Gus Poyet, but this has to bring up questions once again about Newcastle. We've seen this time and again every season, guys, where they will have a run when Pardew's job is under pressure, when Mike Ashley's hearing it from the supporters, when their websites that pop up, all of this nonsense, protests, fan protests, they'll win three or four on the bounce, they'll stabilize mid-table, and then they start to get these sorts of results, and it's happening yet again this season.
Nicky, let's talk about AJ Adam Johnson very quickly. Obviously, an interesting character. Like we said, he's a lifelong Newcastle fan, but really made a name for himself at Manchester City, where many said that he was going to push on and start playing for England on a regular basis. It has made some England appearances, but really not enough. Gone to Sunderland to try and resurrect his career after a disappointing time at City. Is he a player that can really push on and go to the highest levels? I mean, he seems to have that wonderful elusiveness that we seem to love, English players seem to love out on the wing.
Well, I mean, I'm going to name drop now, but I've actually played five-a-side with Adam Johnson. And that boy, I'm shocked that he took that downturn, because he is so quick, that guy. I mean, I was, number one, very glad I was on his team. And number two, not only does he have the speed to run at players and great technique, but he's got the hardest shot I've ever seen. I mean, like, it is an absolute bullet. I feel it's a little bit of that mentality. Like, that last step isn't so much technique, and it isn't so much pace, skill, shot. It's a little bit of a mentality to be ruthless and to, like, understand, like, how to pick apart your opponent's real weaknesses. And I'm not sure, maybe that's what he's missing. That real Gareth Bale streak, which is like, figure out Mike Conn can't defend and just destroy him on one way. I'm not sure if Adam Johnson's got that mentality in his kind of, in his locker. But in terms of shot, pace and trickery, he's got it all.
A player very similar to Adam Johnson, who sort of hit the heights and then spiraled out, is playing currently at Upton Park. West Ham United 2-0 winners over Leicester City, the 3-point ATM of the Premiership this year. Goals by Andy Carroll, bringing back to England. Stuart Downing, bringing back to England. A very comfortable victory, Bertie. You've got to be very, very happy with what's going on. But I want to get your opinions of Andy Carroll. I know that when we spoke earlier in the season, you were sort of secretly happy that Andy Carroll was out of the picture, and that West Ham United and Sam Allardyce were not, I wouldn't say being forced to play a different way, but Sam Allardyce had delved into the transfer market, decided that he wanted to go with some foreign-type players, and Andy Carroll was injured, and we really didn't know what was going to happen to him. And Stuart Downing, obviously, had a decent season last year, but nothing like this year. Now, all of a sudden, Downing and Carroll, the two Englishmen on the team, are playing perhaps the best football of their careers.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, because I run hot and cold with Carroll. I think, you know, he's been a phenomenal player over the years. The one problem he's had is inconsistency and also injuries. But I was definitely worried when I thought, well, he's coming back, because we started the season so well with Valencia, Sacco, Song, you know, the fullbacks, you know, the wingbacks doing their business down the wings. And it was looking very, very attractive. And, you know, and I was saying to myself, I don't recognize this style. I haven't seen this style for a long time from West Ham. So the moment I heard that Nolan was fit and Carroll was coming back, yeah, you know, you start to worry about that. But I said a couple of weeks ago that I like the idea that they had different types of weapons, and Carroll is that weapon. I mean, he's a 6'5" monster that wins everything in the air, gives you that option, gives you the option to have a quick player to play off him. So I think if you can make that work. But unfortunately, the game that I watched on Saturday, I was getting quite frustrated. I was sitting watching the game and I was thinking, stop hoofing the ball long. But it dawned on me that these are the types of games that West Ham have to win. If they want to do a serious charge up the table and stay where they are, you have to beat teams like Leicester. And Leicester, they came with everything to Upton Park on Saturday, and they actually nearly nicked a goal or two at the end. And if it wasn't for Adrian in goal, I mean, he had four blinding saves. But no, you're right. The key has been Stuart Downing, and he has to be, I think, one of the best English midfielders playing right now. He's very similar style to Johnson. He loves to cut in, and he's got a bullet too. And that second goal for West Ham was exactly what they needed at that moment in time, because I really felt like Leicester were coming back into the game. And they're not going to be a pushover this season, but they are going to struggle. And I mean, I hope they can just do it for Pearson, because I think he's a great manager. And but yeah, it was a good, entertaining game, but I do hope they change and go back to that style that got them to fourth place right now.
Are you banging the table? Huh? Stop it right now. Stop banging the table, okay? Yes, Kartik. And talk
about. I was going to jump in about Stuart Downing.
Don't you mean Downinho?
Oh, well, that's. Well, Downinho.
And it is you. Hey, Kartik, you eating the toffees. I can tell.
No, it's not.
Somebody's doing it.
Yeah, who's eating the bloody toffees? It's Kartik.
Unless it's the Skype connection, which it could be. But Stuart Downing, and it's funny, we're talking about AJ and Stuart Downing, both out of the Borough Academy, both guys with great left foot, great technical ability for English players especially. But Birdie, I'm really intrigued by Downing playing so much inside, playing centrally, in a role he really didn't play at Villa, a role he didn't play at Liverpool. He was never used properly at Liverpool, in my opinion. And really a role he never played for Borough. He's taking his game to another level. This is another potential dimension or a question that Roy Hodgson can answer. I mean, maybe Hodgson needs to bring Downing back to the England team and play him in central midfield.
Well, I think Roy Hodgson has got an embarrassment of riches. I'm going to go to Nicky quickly while we wrap this one up. But are we seeing the resurgence of English goal scorers? You've got Andy Carroll in the goals. You've got Charlie Austin in the goals. You've got your boy Kane in the goals. I mean, what is going on? Because it's been quite some time since we saw English players flirting with the top goal scorers in the Premiership.
You know, I think it's a good thing. And I think it's at clubs that, you know, are not spending that much money that are trying to kind of bring through players, you know. I mean, if you look at Harry Kane, he's kind of giving him a chance where a lot of the higher, you know, the teams that pay a lot more money, Harry Kane wouldn't have got that chance because they would have just bought somebody for 30 million. I think it's the same thing with Stuart Downing. Going to West Ham was a great decision because they're not going to go in there and buy some high-priced player that's going to, you know, it's going to stunt, you know, not let you get that kind of time on the field. I think England have got very good players. I don't think you want to get too overexcited. They're not world-class players. They're just good up, you know, they're good players either in good form or coming up. I don't think you can call any three of those players world-class, but they are good.
Well, let's talk about Harry Kane very quickly. And it's a nice story, one you can certainly relate to, Nicky. He was released by Reading as a boy for being too small. At 20, he was still playing for Poole Town of the Wessex League. He went to Canterbury Rangers in the Hellenic League and then to QPR, where he's just absolutely banging in the goals. And what a game we saw at Loftus Road. West Bromwich Albion, who desperately need points under Alan Irvin, going through a little bit of a tough time about, well, QPR have been scratching at the foot of the table for far too long. Well, West Brom go 2-0 up thanks to Lescott and Varela. But then came the Charlie Austin show, a penalty in the 24th minute, the equaliser in the 48th minute, and then, you got to love it, the winner in the 86th minute. Bertie, QPR, Harry Redknapp, and this is what Harry Redknapp says about Austin, because he's not gonna sell him. He says he's a scorer. He's got a good attitude. He isn't a minutes problem. He isn't Larry. He's just a lovely boy.
Yeah,
I mean, that is such a Harry Redknapp description of any player that he likes. But this Harry Redknapp, and the mistake that Redknapp has about getting teams out of trouble, and QPR have been in the bottom three for, I mean, it seems like all season, but this was the victory that finally got them out of the bottom three into 16th place. Yes, they're only 2 points away from Burnley. But Redknapp consistently seems to be able to pull off these Houdini moves. Can he do it again with this QPR team that is, quite frankly, loaded with talent and experience?
You know, yes, he probably can. You know, and Nicky can attest to this, is the style of football that he likes to play is always very entertaining. And I tell you what, every time I turn on the TV to watch games at Loftus Road, they're always fun. They're always interesting. There's always something going on. I would say that they don't have, you know, a lot of overly talented players. What they have is a lot of workman type of players. And I sort of put Austin in that sort of role as well, even though, look, he's banging them in. He scored 11 goals this season. And yeah, I mean, he's playing fantastically well. And every team needs that type of striker. I mean, Liverpool could do with an Austin right now. Somebody who's in the right place at the right time, and he's enjoying his football. And you know, and Harry, it seems like he's been rejuvenated in the last few weeks as well. Because about 2 months ago, I would say they were playing really, really well. And they were really, really unlucky. They, you know, they weren't getting, you know, some of the rub of the green, whatever. But now it's all coming together. And, you know, it's for them to steal it in, you know, whatever it was, the 89th minute or whatever, is typical Harry Redknapp. And that's the kind of entertainment you're going to get. And I hope he stays around. I think they're going to struggle, even though they're out of the bottom three now. I do think they're going to struggle. And I don't think with the financial fair play, they're going to be able to pick up anybody really in January, unless if they, you know, kind of offload a few players. But I don't think they can get much money from the players that they would offload. But,
well, talking of offloading players, I mean, obviously with Charlie Austin being so hot, there are plenty of rumours going around that perhaps he'll be sold. Redknapp says, if we sold Charlie Austin, we might as well go home. We need Charlie to keep doing what he's doing. He can't afford to take his foot off the gas. Kartik, Charlie Austin. Now, obviously, Fernandes is someone who has pumped in excess of £80 million into QPR. If Liverpool turned around, let's just play, you know, a little scenario here. Liverpool turns around and says, here's 30 million quid for Charlie Austin. Do QPR keep him, even though they would probably get relegated if they lost his goals?
I think they do, because we have to remember the situation QPR might be in if they're relegated back to the Football League. This will be a first time that the Football League, under their new financial fair play rules, could actually reject the membership of a club that comes down from the Premier League. There were rumors, all kinds of speculation, Sun articles, Daily Mail articles about this possibility. I think Fernandes, if he can keep the team in the league this season, and remember, they're looking to build a new ground. Loftus Road has been a great West London venue, but they're looking to stabilize as a Premier League club. If he can keep the team in the league this year, which means keeping Charlie Austin for the rest of the season, they can begin to offload players this summer, get that wage bill down, begin to comply with financial fair play, because they're the most out of whack club maybe in all of Europe as far as financial fair play is concerned. But I think they're not gonna, I think they're not going to sell any players, honestly, in January. They're just going to ride this out and damn the consequences, basically.
I just want to add, I want to say one thing about this financial fair play thing. That is the biggest crock of, you know, that you can basically get. Because here's the deal. I think there needs, everybody in the Premier League needs to spend the same. You can't say because QPR is a smaller club, you can't spend as much as
Nicky, you've been living in America too long, mate.
But I'm telling you, it's like teams playing with different rules. That means QPR and Harry Redknapp's going to be judged the same way like Van Gaal is going to be judged. And you're like, but he's having to sell all his best players. There needs to be a system in football, in England, in the Premier League that says pretty much everybody's going to spend about the same amount of money. And that way, the best facilities, the best run clubs will still attract the best players. But you can't go out and have Man United spending £150 million and QPR spending minus £50 million. That's just crazy.
Yeah, but...
And Nicky, you're right also. There's a reason why it's the big clubs that have pushed financial fair play. They don't want anyone to come up and threaten them.
Right.
Well, the thing about financial fair play is, you know, the reason it was brought in was to stop things like Portsmouth happening, where a club which is has a small fan base relatively compared to Man United. And so it's about income in and your expenses going out. And it's all about balancing the books. I totally agree with you, Nicky. I think it's a crock of shit because it allows teams like Barcelona, Real Madrid.
Yeah, exactly.
Debt. They have debt. And so
Real Madrid have so much debt. If the Spanish banks called in Real Madrid's debt, they would be gone in like 1 second.
That's right. You know what I mean? That's right. But you know, so La Liga doesn't want that. They are going to protect whatever they can. But FIFA brought it in, and I understand why they brought it in. Now this is where a team like West Ham is going to benefit because they're moving into a larger stadium, which means more money through the turnstile. More merchandise, hopefully more sponsorship. They can start to try and start play, you know, to start playing with the Chelseas and the Man Uniteds and the Arsenals who've got the money and who've got that income coming in and week out.
Bertie, I hate to break it to you, though, but every team that moves into a new stadium is always wanked the first couple of years.
Thank you.
They are. Hey, by the way, in today's episode, we're giving away one copy of the special one. I'm not talking about me. The Secret World of Jose Mourinho. It's a fantastic book. Forgot to mention it at the top of the show. The special one. The Secret World of Jose Mourinho. Let's talk about Tottenham Hotspur. All right. Talking about financial fair play. Nicky Hollander. I mean, you are like a dog with two, whatever you call it. I mean, it is dreamland at White Hart Lane after... Mr. Pochettino was under a great deal of pressure, but somehow the club have turned it around. The victories are coming and the football is actually looking quite attractive. But I've got to ask you about this. What is it with these 2-1 scorelines? Is that the only scoreline Tottenham know these days? Well, it's going to be very quiet. Oh, dearie me.
Oh, dear.
I think we've lost Nicky Hollander.
I think you upset him.
Let's see if we can get him back.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, there he is. There's his picture icon with some kind of Playmate Bunny type figure. Nicky Hollander, are you there?
I got dropped into the pit of money that Man City have been spending and I couldn't find my way out.
Yeah. Well, we were just actually talking about Tottenham Hotspur and the amount of money they've been spending. And what I wanted to ask you was this.
I hope you said it was minus $4 million because we haven't really spent anything.
Oh, I haven't spent any money. What is it with Tottenham Hotspur and the 2-1 scoreline?
Yeah, well, that just because we haven't got any strikers really that are, you know, even though Harry Kane is, you know, scoring prolifically in Europa League, I think that, you know, I watched the Spurs game and I told you last time, Spurs supporters just do my head in because... The ground is so nervous, right? Even the commentator picked up on it. And he said, Spurs players are so nervous to give the ball away. They don't actually play in that the right way. They don't take some chances with the good through balls because They're so scared that the crowd is going to groan and moan when they give the ball away. You can feel the atmosphere at 2-1. Everyone in the ground is like just waiting for something to go wrong. And that's...
Are you trying to say that your bottoms are clenched?
I'm telling you, like, we're chewing toffees the whole time. Because this is what's happening. Like I told you, the clubs that win, they have the winning mentality, not just in the club, but in the supporters. And the clubs that don't, like Arsenal and Spurs and West Ham, but, for, you know, they're not really kind of a team that thinks they're going to win. But the problem is that these supporters are just waiting for the doom and gloom. And the players realise it, and that affects them. And they supporters have got to take as much responsibility as anyone else. The reason Spurs haven't won for a long time, the reason Arsenal haven't won for a long time, is an atmosphere of it's going to go wrong somewhere.
Well, that's a typical English atmosphere, though. Whenever, yeah. You know, Bertie can attest to that. We'll be watching England and we'll be, you know, 2-0 up and cruising. But we'll look at each other and going, it's about to happen, isn't it? And of course, you know it always does.
Yeah, but Nick, who goes to see England games? Who goes to see England? It's always at Wembley.
Yeah, it's Tottenham and Arsenal fans, isn't it?
We're getting Arsenal and Spurs fans at the game.
Nicky, I don't know how you've managed it, but you've got this like killer echo. So I'm going to call you back and go to Kartik and talk about Burnley very quickly. They seem to have, you know, got out of their little bad run. Ashley Barnes with an absolute cracking goal, but obviously Lamella answering with a screamer himself. Obviously Burnley, you know, they were favourites for the drop. They're now back in the relegation zone again. Are they still favourites for the drop?
They are probably favorites for the drop, but one or two additions in January. Sean Dyche is one of the best young managers in English football. Got a raw deal at Watford before he came to Burnley. I have to sell Charlie Austin, his best player, who we've talked about earlier in the show. Yet they continued to find goals. They got promoted. If they could get one or two guys, particularly at the back in defense, or maybe a holding midfielder, I think they have the organization and the ability to score goals, particularly when Vokes comes back, to potentially stay up. They are a favorite for the drop, but they're not in the dire situation, for example, Hull is in currently, or Leicester.
Before we wrap up Spurs, just Kane said after the game, I'm a Spurs fan, and any Spurs fan will tell you it's a big thing, obviously, playing for the club. I know how much it means to everybody involved with the club, but we've got to take every game as it comes and keep trying to get wins, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Berta, your brother has been a season ticket holder for longer than you've been alive. What's his attitude when he goes to the games? I mean, is it similar to what Nicky's saying? Is he expecting something bad to happen?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I listen to my nieces who also go to the games as well.
And they're quite tidy nieces, by the way, listeners.
All right, easy.
If you want a little Christmas cheer, go to Bertie's Facebook page and click on the picture of the nieces. Very, very tidy.
No, it's funny because the way that I know what's going on is when I read some of their Facebook posts and whatever, and they're always talking about, you know, oh God, here we go again, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so they're actually willing on this sort of negativity that Nicky's talking about, which is the same thing that a club like West Ham did for a couple of years under Sam Allardyce. But yeah, I think the problem is the fans. Yeah, they need to wake up and go, hold on a second. Shouldn't we just be celebrating and enjoying the fact that we're in the Premier League every year? We've finished in the top four or five every year. We've been in the Champions League once in a while. To try and compete against the Arsenals and the Man United and Chelsea money, and Man City, you're not going to be able to do that. I mean, that's just a fact and reality of life. And so they have grandiose ideas that they are bigger than they really are. But the problem is you've got a certain element of fans in that ground who are causing the trouble, and they're causing the anxiety for the players. And that, you know, it spills onto the players and how they play.
But Nicky, so Tottenham have, you know, they've got the plans in place to move out of White Hart Lane and to go into like a 50,000, 60,000 super stadium, much like the Emirates. But we saw how much Arsenal struggled when they first moved to the Emirates. I mean, isn't this the last thing Tottenham want, is to get a stadium that will finally bring in the revenues that will allow them to compete with the Arsenals and the Manchester Uniteds and the Man Cities, but then be in that situation again where they are completely terrified of playing football?
Well, I think the Arsenal's problem was when they did their deal, I think that you had the big crash of 2008 and it just kind of messed everything up. So I think that was more a reason why their interest rate repayment became crazy and they couldn't spend money. But I think that...
Well, the other reason, though, Nicky, was that when they moved from Highbury, which was something like 38,000, a lot of the groups that would bunch together for years and years and would create the atmosphere that made Highbury such a fantastic ground got split up in the Emirates. I mean, do you think Tottenham will be smart enough to go, oh, you know what, we better keep the people who make all the noise together in the new stadium?
Well, I do know. I've seen the plans for the new stadium, and they've got basically a cop end. They've done it like Liverpool, where it's a continuous one kind of tiered thing that goes all the way up to keep the noise in. The ground is designed, you know, they've got less luxury boxes, but more kind of, you know, they're thinking about keeping the atmosphere in there, which is good. So if it's the good atmosphere.
Yeah. So does it have a roof on it, Nicky?
No, it doesn't have a roof on it. It's 60,000. It's going to be 60,000. It's going to have museum. It's going to have like supermarkets, everything. I think it's got some subsidies. The problem is, There's one business that actually is kind of fighting it in court, so that doesn't want to be moved on. So I think it's kind of in the delaying stages at the moment. But truly, I think that I 100% agree when you say that Spurs have to realise that they're not paying Man City money and they're not paying Man United money. And I don't, you know, everybody's wanting to say that their club's a big club, right? But now what big club means, it doesn't mean a club with tradition. A big club just means a team that just tries to buy the Premier League. And I think I would much rather have a realistic kind of outlook on what Spurs can do. And if they did win it without spending money, I think it's better to not be a big club and win the Premier League, because then you've really won the Premier League. Like I say, if you just go out and throw 150
million... But Nicky,
the days
of a small club winning the Premier League, they're gone.
I don't know. Look at Liverpool. Liverpool nearly did it.
Oh, look at Liverpool, small club. Oh,
yeah, no, but,
whoa.
Well, look,
that's
look,
at Nicky yeah. Hollander. At
Listen,
Nicky
Liverpool
Hollander.
Are a small club. Liverpool are a small club, but I don't say that in a way to be negative. They didn't try and buy the league. They bought Suarez for 20 million. In that team that Brendan Rodgers put together, they didn't have high-priced players. Everybody that they had bought, they bought and developed. And so I'm not saying they're not a big club in tradition. They're not a big club in terms of spending big money. And I think last year, if Liverpool had won it, they would have won it having done it the right way.
Yeah.
That's my true opinion. It's not bad to not be a big spending club.
Well, let's go to Kartik. Let's go to Kartik, who is part of the problem, not the solution. The biggest spending club, perhaps in world football. I mean, they pay wages that are literally astronomical. I mean, how do you feel about this, Kartik? I mean, do you feel slightly slighted by Nicky Hollander's statement that you would have bought the Premier League title for two of the last 3 years?
Yeah, no, because that's what happened. That's flat out what happened. Chelsea's bought three titles. Manchester City has bought two titles. Manchester United, since the class of 92 moved on, have been buying titles as well. Every Premier League title since Arsenal's last title, since the Invincibles, was bought.
Correct.
It's as simple as that, full stop. So what Manchester City has done, where I would make a false equivalent, where I think there's a false equivalency, is when Manchester United supporters castigate Manchester City for spending money. Because Manchester United, in fact, I go back to that 6-1 match we won at Old Trafford a few seasons ago. Their wage bill and the transfer values of their starting 11 that day were actually higher than ours, even though we had bought a squad that ended up winning the league that season. So there is an elite class of clubs, and I don't feel slighted at all by that. I'm against financial fair play because I think it also prohibits clubs like Newcastle United and Sunderland that are in economic areas where you can't charge as much for tickets as Arsenal or Tottenham can. No offense to those of you from London. You can't charge as much in a working-class area like Newcastle. Even if St. James Park sat 100,000, they could never generate the revenues Arsenal does.
But I think that's true. That's why financial fair play doesn't work, because once you're in the Champions League, you kind of like it locks you in there, financial fair play.
Yeah.
You can spend much more than everyone else. That's why I say it has to be a salary cap for the whole of European football. There has to be an amount that you can spend, and you know, it's players are still going to get big money. I know there's going to be a union issue with the players' union, but there has to be a limit in what every team can spend, and you spread it out more, so more players will get maybe slightly less money, but more players will be able to get that, and still the best run clubs will still get the best players. But it will just stop teams like spending 150 million and playing against teams that don't spend, you know, spend negative money. And I think that's what we got to protect against.
Yeah, and one other thing I would point out in this discussion is now loan agreements have become another way to kind of fudge the books and get around financial fair play. Radamel Falcao going to Manchester United, you never used to see players of that stature loaned to big clubs for a season. Now you're seeing guys like that because they can pay enormous wages for one season to get them off the books, in this case of AS Monaco. You never used to see the Chelseas or Man Uniteds the Bayern Munichs take players on loan for a season. They would loan players out. They're young players. But now you're seeing them take these big players on loan, which is another development related, I think, to financial fair play.
Yep.
Nicky, you know, very, very noble and very idealistic of you to think about this financial fair play, but you're on crack, mate.
Listen, look at Arsenal. Look at your team, Nick. Your team is the one team that really follows that thing about not trying to buy the league.
And Nicky, if the fair play rules were put into effect, Arsenal would win the league every year.
Exactly. So that's what I mean. You should be for it. I mean, you should be for everybody having that same amount because you got the best manager in the league and you'd end up winning the league.
I mean, there is something to be said for this model of, you know, everybody gets the same money, salary caps, and it would be really interesting to see how it all panned out. But unfortunately, football, as you know, Nicky, has been run on one thing and one thing only since its inception, and that is greed. Okay?
Yeah, but look at the NFL, Nick. Look at the NFL. The NFL is one of the best products in the world in terms of putting an unbelievable thing where they get ratings that blow everybody else out of the water in America where we are, and every year they get a different winner. There's not been a repeat winner of the Super Bowl since the Patriots did it in 2003. I'm telling you, that works. It's just you have to make it happen.
You see, that doesn't work because remember, in American sports, there is no relegation. There is no promotion and relegation. So a team that sucks it up for an entire season can go, it doesn't matter because we're not getting relegated. So they still retain the same types of monies that are coming in. So, and then, of course, if you come last in your division, then you get
the best player in the draft.
Yeah,
right.
If sports ever introduced relegation promotion, it would make it incredibly exciting, and people would be so angst-ridden, exactly what we go through when we watch European
boys,
football.
I tell you what's going to happen before promotion and relegation in American sports. It will be no promotional relegation in the Premier League.
Oh, God.
I'm serious. God. Wow. Yeah, it's going to happen one of these days.
It's not. Yeah,
but it's not going to happen soon enough for Hull City and Steve Bruce, who are, I think, and I believe that there is trouble in paradise. Paul McShane, Hull City's longest-serving player, has been bombed out of the squad, made to train with the under-21s, and has since gone on to Twitter. Steve Bruce, I believe, will be the first managerial casualty of the season. Kartik.
Yes, and this happens to Steve Bruce everywhere he manages after two or three seasons. It happened at Sunderland, and they got rid of him in time that season. Martin O'Neill came in and saved them. It happened to him at Wigan. He got out in time ahead of it. And it happened at Birmingham, and they got relegated. So it's a pattern with him, and they spent a lot of money this summer. They qualified for Europe through the FA Cup. I felt they had underachieved the second half of last season. Remember, they came into the Christmas period, I think, somewhere
mid-table. It's definitely Kartik with the toffees. There's no two ways about it.
I mean, it's not toffees. It's probably my microphone or something. But no, in all honesty, guys, Steve Bruce has this pattern. Every club he manages at, it going bad eventually. And even at Sunderland, it went bad because he took Cleverley and Welbeck on loan from Fergie, from his old boss. And that was able to prop him up for a year there. So I think he's gone at the end of the festive period. If he doesn't get, let's say, 4 points from these next three fixtures, I would assume he'd get the sack.
And then we look at Swansea City, the Gaffers team, who's got to be very, very happy getting the 1-0 victory. But I fear for Swansea, And the reason I fear for them is that next month, one of these stupid international tournaments, namely the Asia Cup and the African Nations Cup. Don't get upset, Nicky, just because you've got a bunch of players there.
I'm flying to New York tomorrow to train Solomon Kalou for that exact team.
That's another name drop.
They're going to win it.
That's shameless. Ki Sung Young and Wilfred Boney will be leaving Swansea. So, Nicky, I'm going to go to you then, being that you will be involved in this African Cup, the Asian Cup going on at the same time in Australia. I mean, Swansea are going to be really hurt by this loss of Boney, who's just a monster player for them.
Yes, absolutely. He's a great player. I think he may be the heir. I wasn't sure at the beginning, but I think he might be the heir apparent to Didier Drogba in terms of he just needs a little bit more, nous in terms of knowing how to kind of work the two centre backs. But he's got that potential to be as good as Didier Drogba, absolutely for sure. I think that yes, you know, you have to take that into consideration that every 2 years is going to be the African Cup of Nations. So if you've got some really good African players, you got to know that. I think maybe the African Federation have to figure out a way to make it in the summer. I know that's not so feasible in Africa, but I mean, it's really making it difficult to sign some of their players. And I think eventually the African Cup of Nations will somehow have to be held, you know, in the when the European Championships are in the summer.
Well, Nicky, I know for a fact that you're not going to like it if it goes from every 2 years to every 4 years. It's because it cut down on your money.
It cuts down on my money. But listen, it's okay because I am, as you know, I'm sure I'll have Solomon Kalou listening to this podcast when it comes out, and he knows that I bleed orange for the elephants, and I'm always Ivory Coast.
Yeah, but Ivory Coast, but they always choke.
That's true. But that's, look, I'm a Spurs fan. I'm quite used to that.
Let's take you off to somewhere where they've been short of wins recently, but got back on track. Southampton and the academy that keeps on giving. This Saturday, Ronald Koeman gave a start to 19-year-old Harrison Reed. And young Mr. Reed basically put Ross Barkley and Samuel Eto'o in his pockets. And Southampton strolled out to a real nice 3-0 win, which they desperately needed. Bertie, let's start with you. Obviously, Koeman perhaps feeling the pressure a little bit after all these losses. Is this the beginning now of another Southampton surge? Graziano Pelle got on the score sheet. He's been struggling recently. Can they make another sustained push, or will they be very happy scratching around mid-table now that they've finally got back to winning ways?
Yeah, it's a good question, because if you look at their next three games, they're playing Crystal Palace away, not an easy place to go to. They're playing Chelsea at home and Arsenal at home. Fortunately, they're at home for those last two games, but I think they're going to struggle. I think basically what's happening here is that everything is sort of leveling itself out. And I think one of the things that we spoke about on the podcast several months ago was that if the Saints start to lose some of their players through injury, and look at who's injured right now. Schneiderlin, Wanyama, Tadic, and recently Gardas as well.
And Rodriguez is still out.
Yeah, and Rodriguez. So when he comes back, he's like a new buy. So I think this is normal that there's this sort of, it's kind of leveling itself out. I mean, I didn't see them losing five games in a row. So the fact that they beat the Toffees 3-0 is a good result. And it will put them in good stead moving forward. But and also, if you didn't have Pelle, you know, if you didn't have Pelle's goals, I think he scored 11 this season or something. You know, I mean, he's been the standout player for them. But Everton were disappointing. I mean, I don't know whether you watched the game or not, but they barely had a shot on goal until the bitter end. I love the fact that you just mentioned that they blooded a couple of younger players, but they did. I think they had like five players who were playing for the under 21s on the bench. And I think three of the five played. So it just shows that, you know, the academy is strong there. And, you know, yeah, look, the Saints are here to stay for a while. And I'm happy that they are doing well. But I do think that probably they are going to fall down a few rungs over the next few months.
Kartik, when we look at Everton, they were very impressive, actually, on Monday, dismantling Queen's Park Rangers. And I'm quite surprised to see them go to St. Mary's and basically roll over like a puppy dog. What gives with Roberto Martinez's team? Is it a Europa League qualification hangover?
It's a bit of both. Both that and second-year syndrome with Martinez. They played the slick football last season. Everybody was wowing about how easy on the eye Everton was. But they depended largely on loan players, Lukaku, Deulofeu, and Barry, two of those guys they bought. They were not that much better than they were under David Moyes, quite frankly. And Moyes had an ability to get results. He had a plan B. He had a plan C. I still think he's a very good manager, irrespective of what happened at United. His record at Everton spoke for itself. His record at Preston spoke for itself. And I'm sure he'll do a good job in Spain now. I think Everton are now suffering from too many fixtures, not a deep enough squad, and quite frankly, being obsessed with playing football a certain way. They don't have a plan B. I think David Moyes would be a much better manager for this club than Roberto Martinez.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think that Everton, it's now about expectations. Look, Everton are one of those teams. Look, you don't expect Everton to win the league. What you can expect, and the one thing that you should want from Everton, is to play good football. And I think that's the difference between Moyes and Martinez. Moyes actually was about not getting beaten and setting his team up to kind of, you know, be very disciplined, whereas Martinez actually wants to kind of have that philosophy of playing and really entertain the crowd. And you're not going to win every time like that. And you have to realize that. You want to go out and see entertaining football. And I think that's why Martinez is a much better manager, because he's a proactive manager. If everybody was like Moyes, like to me, Moyes is a little bit of a Jose Mourinho. It's going to be boring football. He's just setting out to destroy the opposition, whereas Martinez tries to create, and that's harder to do.
Very well put, Mr. Nicky Hollander. 3 weeks ago, we had on this pod all but anointed Chelsea champions as they led Manchester City by 9 points. Now, going into tomorrow, it is all tied up after another, what would you call it, workmanlike performance by City. We will go to Kartik, even though he's got a dodgy mic. And don't forget, in today's episode, we're giving away one copy of the special one, The Secret World of Jose Mourinho. All you have to do is email World Soccer Talk. That's right, World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod. David Silva with a couple, and then Yaya Toure with a Yaya Toure special. Although for me, I thought James Milner was the man of the match again. The most underrated English player in the history of English football. Talk to me about Manchester City, Kartik. When are we going to see Aguero? Are they back? Are they ready to take the title 3 years and three times in 4 years?
And now Milner has played basically every outfield position other than center back since he came to the club. He was the striker yesterday. Yep. He lined up as the number nine. So he's amazing. I completely agree with you. He's a throwback to the kind of players we had when we were struggling, fighting relegation, going down divisions, the Kinkladzis, the Goaters, the Paul Dickoffs. He's a throwback. And for City supporters like myself, who've been around for a while, we like having a James Milner on the squad. We don't need a 11 Agueros, as great as he is.
Well, you want at least one English player on the team, for crying out
loud. Well, that's true. I mean, obviously, we have a keeper. Well, we have another English player that we hope to keep beyond next week. I guess that's a subject for another time, that loan agreement with MLS. But the performance was right. It was a workmanlike performance. It was efficient. This is not a Tony Pulis-managed Palace side. This is a Neil Warnock-managed side. So eventually they were going to break down, and you just had to keep knocking at the door. Had this been a Pulis-managed team going up against City without a recognizable striker, you might have seen a 0-0 in this one. Or maybe even Palace nick a goal late and win 1-0, smash-and-grab type victory. But I worry for Palace also, because they are underachieving now. They overachieved last season. They had one of the best managers in English football. Now they have a guy who we know is not one of the better managers and is a championship-level manager managing them, trying to keep them in the Premier League.
Bertie, to be fair, though, I thought the first 45 minutes, Palace were the better team.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I think I've seen that in the last few games. I mean, they were the same way when they played Spurs. they were unfortunate to lose that. But it was always going to be an uphill road to play against Man City, you know, away from home. I mean, even though Man City are missing Aguero and Dzeko and Jovetic, you know, those are three key players for City. But they've got so many weapons, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, I mean, their last seven games,
Nasri,
I think,
David,
you know,
Silva.
Yeah, and of course, having Silva come back, you know, I mean, they're playing well. You know, I think Palace will survive. I don't think necessarily Warnock is the right type of manager. He just grinds me. Every time you see him in the post interview, he's always complaining about decisions, and that's all he ever does. So, but no, granted, I mean, Palace don't have the types of players that Man City have, and it goes back to that whole financial fair play. They can't buy better players. They have a small ground. They produce a fantastic atmosphere at home. But when they go away from home, they're going to give all they've got. And, you know, so, yes, I thought they did do well in the beginning, but it was only, you know, remember, the game is 90 minutes, so you're always going to get spanked when you've got so much class that Man City has, so...
Talking of teams that won't be buying the title anytime soon, Aston Villa, they took on Manchester United at Villa Park. Cracking game of football, sensational atmosphere, and obviously the big talking point other than the glorious Christian Benteke goal was the sending off of Gabby Agbonlahor. I am going to go to you, Nicky Hollander, because you've played this game at a professional level. I'm looking at Agbonlahor going in on the challenge for Ashley Young. He's got his eyes on nothing but the ball. Yes, it's a very forceful challenge, but Ashley Young has a reputation, and it is a reputation for being a big girl's blouse. Lee Mason has bought this reputation and flashed the straight red card to Agbonlahor when Villa looked like they were in position to win this game. Talk to me about this tackle. What was going through Agbonlahor's mind? What was going through, more importantly, Lee Mason's mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think Agbonlahor was going for the ball 100%. And I think in modern football now, you know, if you go in with too much force now, it doesn't matter if you get the ball, you keep your feet on the ground. It's the laws are changing more and more, and it's happening. You know, I guess, you know, we're more safety conscious and we're trying to protect players, you know, which I totally understand. But now you're taking a completely legal tackle. But because he's going in with too much force, you're saying now it's, you know, you have to still make the game physical. You still have to allow teams to tackle. And for me, that was a very strong, hard tackle, but he had his eyes on nothing but the ball, and so you can't criticise him from going through with, like, force. I think that, of course, Ashley Young's got that reputation, you know, for diving. I don't think he dived in that situation, but I think that the laws of the game are changing, and they're there to obviously protect the very skillful players from getting hit, but then it makes it hard to compare the players now from the players a while ago, because they're so protected, the players now, that you can't. It's such an offensive game, which is a good thing, but I think it takes away a little bit, because now they're playing against defenders that can't do anything. If they miss time a tackle, they're on a yellow card. In the old days, if you missed time to tackle, you were like, all right, sorry about that, mate. But now, if you miss time to tackle twice, you're off. And that's just crazy to me.
So, Kartik, what's Lee Mason? I mean, is he just looking at the aggression of Agbonlahor and not the outcome?
Yeah, I mean, Agbonlahor actually had the ball and took a bad touch, if I recall correctly. And Ashley Young has a reputation for flopping. He didn't in this situation. I agree with Nikki. But I thought, because of Ashley Young's reputation, that there might not even be a foul called. And in fact, I think he just saw that Agbonlahor's cleat went up a little high, his boot went up a little high, and he... and there was a lot of force in the challenge, but that was because he took a bad touch and was on the ball, basically. And Ashley Young made a tackle. It's a very tough tough call to make. And I think maybe we're over-legislating the game now, the laws of the game, to where an official is in a can't-win situation there, because obviously there was a lot of force in the challenge, and Louis Van Gaal and Manchester United are complaining if Ashley Young happens to get injured, if maybe his leg is shattered in that challenge. But then nothing really came of it, and Van Lahore was sent off in front of the home crowd at Villa Park. So it's a can't-win situation. I hate to put officials in this pickle.
So, Bertie, down to 10 players facing the might of Manchester United, Valencia, Van Persie, Mata, Falcao, Rooney. I mean, this is a quality team. Angel Di Maria. And United couldn't break them down. What do you make of this? Because this United team have been absolutely firing on all cylinders, to use a horribly lame cliche, but just beating everything put in front of them and doing it with a little bit of flair. Why did they struggle? Was it the crowd that urged Villa on?
Yeah. You know, I mean, this is a weird one because, you know, one of the stats before the game that I was reading about was that Aston Villa have only won once in 38 games against Man United. So, I mean, so you look at that and you think, all right, so that's 3 points for Man United. And that all the talent that Man United has, it baffles me that they can't get through that Aston Villa defence. But, hey, look, sometimes it happens. I mean, look at that game when West Ham went to Chelsea, parked the bus, you know. It was 18th century football. And sometimes that's what you've got to do. You've got to roll your sleeves up and just get stuck in. And so, you know, that's why we had that Van Lahore foul, is because these players are charged up. I mean, this is a team that is down the bottom. They're fighting for everything. It was the same thing when I watched the West Ham-Leicester game. Leicester are fighting for every ball. Song got fouled 4 or 5 times, and they were vicious fouls. But in the good old days, that's just a hard tackle. And most of those weren't given as yellows. But it's the same thing happening here. I think Villa is backs to the wall, and they pulled it off. And that's a fantastic point for them. And so will they carry on and produce some results? Maybe. They've got Swansea, Sunderland, and Crystal Palace. You'd have to say that out of those three games, they could probably get a minimum of 4 points. And I tell you, this league is so close right now, from the from the top 10 to the bottom few. There's not much in it. So picking up points here, there, and everywhere else is really important. So it was a great result for Villa.
Wisely said.
Quick point, a point about Villa. Have you guys noticed that they've started to play well since Roy Keane was sacked as the assistant manager? I don't think that's a coincidence.
Well, I love the fact that the came out that Roy Keane went over to Tom Cleverley's house and knocked on his door and wanted to know who the mole was in the dressing room. I'd love to know who the mole is in our dressing room who keeps on sending mean tweets about Nate Aburea. Hey, let's put a bow on this weekend, round 17 in the Premiership. Kartik, I am going to ask you to get a new mic by this time next week, all right? But tell us your thoughts on this week.
And I'm using a different mic this week. That probably explains it, guys. And I apologize for that and apologize for our listeners. The bow on this week is we're at Christmas, and Arsenal and Spurs are level on points. So all those folks who said Spurs were having a down year and Pochettino was going to need more time, right at the race for fourth.
Nicky Hollander, put a bow on this weekend.
I want to hug you for saying that, basically. But yes, I am exactly the same thing, basically. Everybody that's jumping on, all those negative Spurs fans that's jumping on Pochettino's back, they're in the last 32 in Europe. They're in the semi-final of the Carling Cup. They're still in the FA Cup because everyone else is, and they're joint with Arsenal on points. So I'm very happy, very positive. I don't care about this season, but get off his back because he's doing great.
Oh, you bloody homer. Go on, Bertie. you better not do the same thing with West Ham United.
I'm not going to mention West Ham. No. So for me, I love the fact that Austin got his first hat-trick for Queen's Park Rangers, you know, for Villa for nicking a point, for Silva coming back, And for Harry Redknapp for still fighting. God bless his cotton socks.
And of course, for me, it's the resurgence. We spoke about it halfway through the show, but the resurgence of the English centre forward. Andy Carroll, God bless him. I love him. I love a battering ram. Harry Kane, great to see a young man go through the ranks, start scoring goals. And the same with Charlie Austin to get his first hat-trick. So brilliant stuff. Don't forget, you can subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn and iTunes to this wonderful pod. You can tweet us at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod. That's at World Soccer Talk, WSTPod. And don't forget, we also have a book, the special one. And I'm not talking about the contents of Bertie's underwear. It's The Secret World of Jose Mourinho. I want you all to have a very Merry Christmas. Drink massive amounts of booze. Watch the Boxing Day games for Kartik Karashnaya, Nicky Hollander, Robin Burt. I am Nick Webster, and we will catch you all next Sunday. Bye for now.
Come on, you Irons.
And of course, for me, it's the resurgence. We spoke about it halfway through the show, but the resurgence of the English centre forward, Andy Carroll. God bless him. I love him. I love a battering ram. Harry Kane. Great to see a young man go through the ranks, start scoring goals, and the same with Charlie Austin to get his first hat trick. So brilliant stuff. Don't forget, you can subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn and iTunes to this wonderful pod. You can tweet us at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod. That's at World Soccer Talk, WSTPod. And don't forget, we also have a book, the special one. And I'm not talking about the contents of Bertie's underwear. It's The Secret World of Jose Mourinho. I want you all to have a very Merry Christmas. Drink massive amounts of booze. Watch the Boxing Day games for Kartik Karashnaya, Nicky Hollander, Robin Burt. I am Nick Webster, and we will catch you all next Sunday. Bye for now.
Come on, you Irons.